Shalom, welcome to SJTF. This is Chaim Ben Pesach. This program is dedicated to elevating the souls of Simcha Chasdai, Pesach Ben Dov, Bari Hoffman, Ruven Hoffman, Harav Meir Kahana, and Yosef Ben Meir. Before we get to our many questions from our great JTFers, I want to speak about several topics as briefly as possible. First of all, Shlomo is continuing to make major progress in building new news pages for us. Again, we want to build a Hebrew news page and an English news page on our server, on our website, not on Facebook, not on YouTube, not on any of these other sites, an independent Hebrew news page and an independent daily English news page on our server, on our website. And hopefully it'll be updated daily and there'll be new videos and polls and articles and comments, and it'll just be a great place to go to for information, for discussion, for enlightenment. It'll just be a great educational experience and a great way for us to spread our message. So this is something that we're working on. It's something that obviously you could tell from my enthusiasm. I'm really looking forward to it. Ever since we proved on Facebook, when we got 27,000 likes or members in 3.5 months, and that's only among Israeli Jews, which is, there are only 6 million Jews in Israel. Israel is a small country. The fact that we were able to get 27,000 likes in 3.5 months on Facebook among Israeli Jews, this proved that our message is a message that can get major support among Israeli Jews if we're just given a chance, if we're just given an audience, if we could just reach people with our message. A lot of people do agree and a lot of people will join us. We've proven that already on Facebook. And we're much better known now because of that experience. So we really want to transfer that now to our own independent pages on our own website. They can't take it down. Facebook can't censor it. This, we really want this to happen on our own independent pages. It's going to happen slower on our own independent pages because we don't have the benefit of reaching such a huge number of people so quickly as we did on Facebook. So it'll happen slower, but even if we make steady progress and eventually have thousands and eventually after that tens of thousands of people joining and participating, that's something that would be a major accomplishment, and that's something that I do believe would change the dynamics of what's going on now in Israel. So we're really looking forward to that. Shlomo is making progress. It's not easy to build these pages because there are all types of complex issues that come up when you want to build your own page, because there are all types of things we want to do with the page that involve different types of technology that we have to put in. So it's not an easy project for Shlomo to complete, and therefore it's going to take us another couple of weeks, I would say, another couple of weeks or so. But we're making major progress, and it's something that we have to look forward to. We can really look forward to it, and I hope that all of our great JTFers are going to be enthusiastic about it when it does appear, God willing, and I hope that our great JTFers will very much want to participate in an active way. That's the first thing I wanted to mention. I just wanted to give you a general update on what's going on. Secondly, on September 18th, Thursday, September 18th, an election is being held that not many Americans are familiar with, not many people are familiar with outside of Great Britain. But it's an important election that will decide a lot about the future of Great Britain. Scotland is voting on September 18th on whether or not to become an independent nation. If they vote yes, they will become independent of Great Britain. Scotland is about 40% of Great Britain's territory, even though there are only a little bit over 5 million people living there. It has almost all of Great Britain's oil reserves and a lot of resources. So a lot of Scots naturally and logically, in my opinion, want to be independent from England. They feel they're getting ripped off by England, and they feel they've been mistreated by England during the past 300 plus years that England has controlled Scotland. And so they want independence. I think this is an important election for a number of reasons. First of all, the British, we don't shed any tears for anything that happens to the British in this organization. In our organization, we don't shed any tears for the British. The British deliberately and maliciously blocked the doors to the land of Israel during the Holocaust. They were controlling, the British Empire controlled the land of Israel. The land of Israel was one of their colonies during the Holocaust. 6 million Jews could have been saved. 6 million Jews could have escaped to the land of Israel. The German Nazis at first just wanted to expel the Jews. They just wanted to throw the Jews out of Europe. They figured they were going to conquer Europe and then eventually conquer the world. That was their insane plan. And so they felt at first, let's just get the Jews out of the way. And Adolf Eichmann and the other Nazi leaders, Yimach Shemam V'Zichram, met with Jewish leaders and met with people to try to get the Jews to go to another country, to try to get them out of Germany and out of Poland and Hungary and all the other countries in Europe, to try to get them to go anywhere outside of Europe. They wanted them out of the way, in other words. They wanted these millions of Jews out of the way so that they could win the war in Europe. And after they won in Europe, they felt that they'd go on to conquer the world. Obviously, that wasn't going to happen. But we wouldn't have had a Holocaust. The Jews would have been thrown out of Europe. They could have gone to the land of Israel. And you can imagine what would have happened if 6 million Jews had gone to the land of Israel at that time. What a different situation we would have had. And a lot of those Jews were religious with big families, having a lot of children. We probably would have had, instead of 6 million Jews in Israel, we probably would have had 30 million Jews in Israel today. 25, 30 million Jews there. Can you imagine the difference it would have made? But the British maliciously and deliberately closed the doors. They fired on ships of Jewish refugees desperately trying to escape Nazi-occupied Europe, sunk the ships and murdered with their own hands. The British Navy did this. They murdered hundreds of Jewish men, women, and children, slaughtered them in the sea for trying to escape Nazi-occupied Europe, demanded that all the ships return to Nazi-occupied Europe, return to go to the death camps. And of course, the British, along with Franklin Delano Roosevelt and the United States, refused to bomb the rail lines leading to the death camps like Auschwitz, refused to bomb the death camps themselves. They could have stopped the Nazi murder machinery dead in its tracks. But they gave a green light to Nazi Germany and to the other Nazis of Europe to slaughter as many Jews as they wanted to. And so over 6 million Jews were murdered because of British perfidy. So we are not sympathetic to the British on this program at all. They have the blood of 6 million Jews on their hands. And even after the Holocaust, did you know that they did not vote in favor of creating a Jewish state in the UN when the UN voted to create a Jewish state? England abstained, which meant, in effect, they voted against. Did you know that it was British army officers that led the Arab Legion that invaded the new state of Israel, trying to destroy the state and perpetrate a Holocaust against the Jews? They were led by Lord Pasha and by British army officers. They were the commanders of the Arab soldiers invading the land of Israel. They did so with the full support of the British and armed by the British, fully armed by the British. The British did everything they could. After they murdered 6 million Jews during the Nazi Holocaust, they did everything they could to help the Arab Nazis perpetrate another Holocaust against the Jews, this time in the land of Israel. Such vicious Jew haters. And to this day, they do everything possible, together with the Germans, the French, and the other European Union Nazis. They do everything possible to destroy Israel, to hurt Israel, to undermine Israel, to fund every radical left group like Peace Now. Everything that they could to destroy Israel, they do. So you can imagine what type of lesson this would be for England if, after losing their empire, because, you know, at one time Britain had the biggest empire in history. Britain probably controlled about a third of the world. Had the biggest empire in history. On virtually every continent. I say virtually because I guess they didn't have any colonies on Antarctica. But everywhere else, they controlled huge amounts of territory in Africa, in Asia, all of Australia and New Zealand. They controlled the United States before the Revolutionary War. Vast colonial possessions. And they lost it all. They lost it all. Especially after they started with the Jews. And now, and they also lost Ireland, of course, the Republic of Ireland. But now they have England, Wales, Scotland, and England, Wales, and Scotland are part of the island that Great Britain controls. And then they have a portion of the island of Ireland in Northern Ireland. And eventually they're going to lose that too. But in the meantime, Scotland, which is 40% of the island of Great Britain, the island that Britain controls, the island of Britain, 40% is Scotland. If they vote to break away on September 18th, that would really shrink the size of England considerably, and I think it would be a humbling experience for the British. They deserve it. They have it coming to them, and it will be another lesson from God. If it happens, it'll be another good lesson from God as to what happens when you dare go against God's chosen people. I will bless them that bless thee and curse them that curse thee. That's what happens to every nation that goes against Israel. Eventually, every nation that goes against Israel winds up paying. In this world and in the next world. In the next world, of course, much worse. The punishment is much more severe. And, you know, it's not just vengeance for what they did to the Jewish people. An independent Scotland would also be a huge blow to the New World Order. What is the New World Order? There are people who want to create one massive international government run by the UN or run by some by international agencies. They call it a New World Order. Henry Kissinger's latest book is called World Order. Hillary Clinton just wrote a review for the book, warmly praising it and saying that she shares the goals of the book, and she's the front runner to become president. But Democrat and Republican, this has been the policy of the United States and of other governments. They want to create a new world order. It was George Bush Sr. who coined the phrase new world order in his State of the Union message to the Congress. The phrase was around before him, but he used the phrase new world order, that we want to create a new world order. And what it means is that little by little, borders will disappear and differences between nations will disappear, and we'll all become one big international community. That's why they call it the world community, the international community, the world body, international law. These are all terms for setting up Gog and Magog, for setting up the empire that's going to try to destroy Israel and that imposes evil policies on the rest of the world. All of it was foretold in the Bible by the prophets. And it is bad for the world. It is bad for the world for these things to happen, for these evil people to create a one world order where basically everybody is under the rule of international bodies. You already have this in Europe with the European Union. The European Union and European Parliament can now override and supersede decisions of local parliaments and impose their own laws. This is very bad for the world, very dangerous for Israel and the Jewish people, very dangerous for the United States, very dangerous for the United States. This is why we don't have any border controls in the United States. Nobody secures or protects our border because the New World Order people don't believe in borders. And I don't have to tell you what happens to the United States if you have completely open borders. That's the end of the United States. Very quickly, that's the end. The United States would be overrun by hordes of third world invaders very, very fast. So if you have countries becoming independent instead of coming together, if countries all come together and become one big blob, you know, one giant empire like the European Union, then of course it's much easier to impose a new world order. But if countries assert their independence and people assert their national sovereignty, that is bad for the New World Order. An independent Scotland would be a blow to the New World Order. So I hope that the Scots do vote for independence. The no votes, those who were against independence, had overwhelming leads in the polls. In fact, they had a 22 percentage point lead just a month ago. But then they had a debate on national television recently, and the First Minister, what they call the First Minister of Scotland, presented such a compelling and powerful case and won the debate so decisively that the latest polls show that it's very, very close, and that the Scots may actually vote for independence. For the first time, a poll was released yesterday that shows the pro-independence Scots are leading now by a very small margin, only 2%, 51-49%. But it's the first poll ever taken that shows the pro-independence forces ahead of the anti-independence forces. The first time we've ever seen that in Scottish history. Because the Scots have been brainwashed for so many years that, you know, you have to be dependent on England and you have to get welfare from England and you can't do anything on your own. You know, the same propaganda that the British used when they told the 13 colonies of the United States not to become independent. The same propaganda they used for the Jews in Israel in the 1940s when the Jews for Israel were fighting for independence. The British said, how can you make it on your own? Don't you realize that you'll be overrun by Arab armies and you can't possibly support yourself? You know, the same basic propaganda line. They're using that now with the Scots to try to intimidate and scare and blackmail the Scots into remaining part of Great Britain. But for the first time, a poll shows that there may be a majority in favor of independence. Let's hope that happens, God willing, on September 18th. That would be a blow to the empire and to empires, a blow to the New World Order, and I think it would make this a better world if Scotland were independent. So it's something we're watching. I want to comment on one other thing. The Netanyahu government, when we criticize that evil government, many Jews outside of Israel say, wow, you're not allowed to criticize. What are you talking about? Netanyahu is right-wing. There's nobody better than him. He knows what he's doing. In Israel, we don't get a lot of that. In Israel, right-wing Jews, for the most part, don't like Netanyahu. Even right-wing Jews in the Likud don't like him. They're stupid for being in the Likud. But even those in the Likud wish they could replace him. They don't like Bibi. And I'm talking about the Jews that consider themselves to be right-wing. And when I say they're stupid for being in the Likud, I don't include Moshe Feiglin and his followers. I'm talking about, I don't think Moshe Feiglin and his followers are stupid at all. I'm referring instead to the other Likud people who support people like Danny Danon and Miri Regev and those types of people who consider themselves to be right-wing, but they're supporting people who are not right-wing. And, you know, but they don't like Bibi either. They do not like Bibi. I mean, how could they like him? He's so weak and so appeasing and so pathetic. Well, this past week, the Likud government coalition just approved 2,200 new homes that will be built by Israeli Jewish tax dollars. Israeli Jewish taxpayers have to pay for this. 2,200 new homes for Arabs in East Jerusalem. The Jews, for the Jews, there's a building freeze ever since Bibi took power in 2009. He has an anti-Semitic freeze on Jewish building in Jerusalem. If there's any building going on, it's with private money and the government harassing the builders and giving them a hard time. But here, you have 2,200 new homes. That means thousands of large Arab families now being allowed to move into East Jerusalem. To create more facts on the ground so that this area of Jerusalem, which they want to take away from us, and they want to create an independent state of so-called Palestine, with Jerusalem as its capital, this is where they're going to create that so-called state. And this is where the capital would be. And Bibi is giving them all the ammunition that they need. He's building homes for thousands of new Arab families to move in while he's freezing building for the Jewish families. In other words, he's selling Jerusalem to our enemies. And this is so typical of all of his policies. And it's the same thing. And by the way, it's the same thing for the policies of Naftali Bennett. Naftali Bennett isn't fighting this. He and his party, the so-called Jewish Home Party, they remain part of Bibi's government. Bibi has made many promises that he's going to now that he's going to begin building in Judea and Samaria, and he's going to make it up to them, and he's going to... He's been making these promises since 2009. Two elections have gone by, and he's made numerous promises of how he's going to build thousands and thousands of housing units for the Jews in Judea and Samaria. Never kept a single promise. Never kept any promise. He makes promises and declarations and then continues the anti-Semitic freeze on Jewish building while allowing the Arabs to build everywhere. That is the worst possible nightmare for Jews. He's creating facts on the ground that are enabling a Palestinian state to come into being, even though there is no Palestine, there are no Palestinians, that's an Arab lie, Arab bluff, but he's enabling this to come into being. His policies are so disastrous and such a disgrace. When will people learn? He agreed to the ceasefire with the Hamas terrorists in Gaza. They're already building new tunnels. When will people learn? When will people learn? We have been right on all of these issues from the start, and all the establishment politicians and organizations have been wrong. This is why we need to reach the people of Israel. If you want to help us reach them when we build these new news pages, God willing, that Shlomo is now working on, if you want us, a group that has proven that we're capable of getting a lot of members fast if we just can reach them, we proved that with Facebook, with what happened on Facebook, if you want to help us to reach those people so that there will be a true right-wing alternative that will truly represent, uncompromisingly represent Jewish interests and Jewish survival and strengthening Israel. And not only not strengthening our enemies, but working to do everything we can to weaken our enemies and get them out of Israel. If you want that type of strong Jewish voice, then JTF is that voice. Help us, do what you can to help us and join with us. I believe that we did influence things when we were on Facebook and when we had those 27,000 members before they took us down, before Facebook took us down. I think we were influencing the debate. I not only think, I know. I saw people doing videos. I'm not going to say who, but they include members of the Knesset and former members of the Knesset doing videos and making statements that word for word were what we were saying, using the same statistics and arguments that come from our movement. I saw with my own eyes, I saw this. So we can have an impact, a big impact, but we need your help. There are four things we need you to do. Number one, we need your prayers. Please pray for our success now. This is a critical time. Please pray for our success. Very important. Prayers are very, very important. Very important to us. Secondly, when you see us put up English and Hebrew videos, please like and share those videos on Facebook, and please like, favorite, comment, and mirror the videos on YouTube. And by the way, I left out on Facebook, you should also comment on the videos as well. That's the second thing is the videos. First thing is praying for us, second thing is videos. Third thing, our forums and our Facebook pages. Help us by putting up good posts and making the forums and the Facebook pages stronger. That's important. We're going to need your help much more when we put up our independent news sites. Then we're really going to need you to be active and put up good and make good comments on the articles and the videos and the other things we're going to be putting up there, God willing. So then we're really going to call upon you to really get involved. And I think you'll enjoy doing it. I think you're going to have fun doing it, because this will be Facebook without the censorship. This will be Facebook and YouTube without the censorship, without, you know, being able to say politically incorrect things. Of course, we don't want obscene language. There's, you know, we have our rules on our forum, as you know, on our forums. But we're not gonna take you off for saying something that's truthful and politically incorrect, because we're going to be saying things that are politically incorrect. So that's the third thing. Post and comment on our forums and our Facebook pages, and get ready. Get ready, because we're going to need you to do a lot of posting and a lot of commenting on our news pages when they come out in a couple of weeks, God willing. And fourth, Last but not least, the fourth thing that we need you to do. Don't forget, the first thing was praying for us. Second thing is our videos. Third thing is the forums and Facebook pages. The fourth thing that we need you to do, and this is really the number one thing that is our obstacle, of course, checks, money orders, cash donations make a big difference. People who send checks, money orders, and cash donations to our post office box, every contribution makes a big difference. It really makes a big difference. It enables us to reach people. What a crime that we can't reach every Jew in Israel all the time with our message. Wow, what a world this would be. What a different world this would be if we could do that. But we're going to do it, God willing. Not every Jew in Israel, but as many as we can. We're going to be reaching as many as we can. We are trying to do it now already with what we have on Facebook. And we're going to be doing it, God willing, with our quality news, daily news sites soon, God willing. But we need your help to reach more people. And that's why your contributions make a difference. If you send checks, money orders, cash donations through the regular mail to the post office box, or if it's more convenient for you, that's fine. If it's more convenient for you, you can donate online with your credit card by going to our PayPal account, which is on hayamin.org. Hayamin.org is our Hebrew page. Our Hebrew main page is hayamin.org. You go to hayamin.org, and there's the whole page is in Hebrew, except for that one word, donate, on top. The word donate on top is in English. You click on the word donate, and in several minutes, you can conveniently contribute with your credit card. It makes no difference if you send checks, money orders, or cash donations through the regular mail, or if you do it online with your credit card. To us, it makes no difference. It has the same beneficial effect. So we need your help. Let's make a difference. This is a critical time. I am excited. Yes, I do believe that we got a shot here. I'm super encouraged by the experience we had on Facebook. It proves to me that what we've been saying all these years, just give us a chance and the people of Israel will be open to our message and many will want to join us. We've proven that, and so I'm so anxious now to do that and do it on our site, on our own website, where they can't take us down. I'm so anxious to do that, God willing. So we need your help, and please help us with that vital project and with everything that we're doing. Please help us, and together, we of course want to change Jewish history, God willing. We want to make a difference. We want to change as many people and wake people up and reach as many people as we can, and eventually, God willing, become a mass movement and change Jewish history. All right. Let's go now to, on that encouraging note, let's go to our questions from our great JTFers. Let me just make sure everything's okay over here. I'm just checking something. Yes, it looks okay. And we go to the great Wandering Samurai 81, who writes, and I quote, thoughts on, and then we have the names of 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 people over here. Okay, they all look like sports figures. Yeah, they're all sports figures. Okay. Wandering Samurai, I have to warn you in advance, I don't know a lot about sports figures. I don't follow these things. This I don't follow. So I don't know a lot about this. Okay? I'll try my best to answer the question. The first one is Dwayne The Rock Johnson. Well, he's a professional wrestler. You know, I think professional wrestling is fixed. I think it's fixed. I think we all know that it's fixed. So, you know, aside from that, I don't know anything else about the Dwayne Johnson, but I think his profession is fixed. So I'm not an admirer of somebody who's involved in something that I think is just fixed. I think they're insulting the intelligence of the people that are watching. And next one is Roger Clemens. Roger Clemens, of course, is the baseball pitcher. I don't know enough about him. I know he was accused of using drugs to enhance his performance. I know there were drug allegations against him. I think he was found not guilty, if I recall correctly, but I know there were drug allegations against him, but aside from that, I don't really know much about him. I don't know much more than that about him, except for that very general, vague, general remembering the headlines. Next is Lance Armstrong. Okay, here we have the racing cyclist. Now, he did use drugs, to enhance his performance and lied about it repeatedly. And I don't think he's an honest person. I don't think he's an honest person. And I think he has violated the rules that he promised to abide by, and I think he lied to his fans, and I think he lied to the public. So, you know, I don't. Those are not qualities that I can respect. Next is Michael Jordan. Well, he's of course the black basketball player who has earned over the years. He's earned hundreds of millions of dollars. You know how many products he promotes? Hundreds of millions of dollars. I don't know much about him except to say that I don't think he's worth hundreds of millions of dollars. I think it's crazy. And finally, Pete Rose. Pete Rose was of course an ex-baseball player and a manager. He was also a manager. Him, I really don't know very much about. I just don't know much about him. I'm sorry, Wandering Samurai, that I can't give you more detailed comments on these guys. I just don't know them. I don't know much more about it. That's the only thing. Those are the only things I know. Thank you, Wandering Samurai. And we go now to the great Joe Gutfeld, who writes, and I quote, Shalom Chaim, can you tell why Rabbi Kahana's killer got off? There was a story in the New York Post about it. Thanks, unquote. Well, his killer was acquitted in the New York State trial. And you're referring to El Said Nosser, Yemach Shmo V'Zichro Shem Reshaim Yirkav, the Egyptian Muslim Nazi who was the actual trigger man. But there were about a dozen people involved in the conspiracy to murder Rabbi Kahana. This was Al-Qaeda. And they had a mosque. Al-Qaeda had a mosque. They called it the Mosque of Peace in Jersey City. Sheikh Rahman, the blind sheikh, he was the sheikh in the mosque. And Osama bin Laden was funding them. And the very first person that they decided to murder, it wasn't just El Said Nosser. He didn't have one murderer. There were numerous people, including Sheikh Rahman, were all his murderers. They were his assassins. If you give somebody weapons and tell them to do something and arm them and instruct them, you're just as much a murderer as the person who pulled the trigger. And there were about a dozen people involved in that conspiracy. Only one was arrested by the Jew-hating Manhattan District Attorney's Office. The filthy, self-hating Jews in the Manhattan District Attorney's Office decided to arrest only one person, only the trigger man in Rabbi Kahana's murder. And the anti-Semitic New York Police Department also decided not to go after Rabbi Kahana's murderers and just to arrest one person. They said it was a lone gunman. You know, we know now that's not true. But they said at the time it was just a lone gunman, and of course they blew the case, and the FBI didn't arrest anybody. The FBI ignored the case and did nothing about it. This was all because of anti-Semitism and because they hated Rabbi Kahana, because Rabbi Kahana told the truth, and they were a bunch of lying, corrupt scum, and so they hated Rabbi Kahana. And so they only arrested one person, El Said Nosser, the Manhattan DA. They picked an almost all-black jury to try the case, and of course the black jury, you know, they let him off. They got him, they acquitted him on the murder charge. William Kunstler and Ron Cuby were the attorneys for this scum, and they got him, you know, they got the black jury, the almost all black jury, almost everybody on the jury was black. They got them to acquit this vile beast who murdered one of the greatest men in history, Rabbi Kahana. But fortunately, JTF came into existence, Joe. That's why I formed JTF in 1992. The first objective of JTF, the reason I formed the organization, originally, the original purpose was to go after the murderers of Rabbi Kahana and get them prosecuted, and we did. Rabbi Kahana's murderers are all sitting in federal prison now, all of them. El Said Nosser, Sheikh Rahman, they all have sentences of life without parole. They are in prison, they're in federal prison, and they've been in federal prison since the early 1990s, for more than 20 years now, and they have life without parole sentences. And we got them prosecuted. They were not planning to prosecute these people. We got them prosecuted on the charge of murdering Rabbi Kahana. Nosser was charged with violating Rabbi Kahana's civil rights by murdering him, which is in effect the federal homicide charge, federal murder charge. And he got life without parole on that charge. I mean, that's in effect what he was charged with. So they did wind up getting life sentences in the federal system. And we had a huge campaign at the time. I have dozens of letters to the editor that we put in the Jewish press at the time that we got printed in the Jewish press. Our supporters, Jews and Gentiles, sent letters and we got them printed in the Jewish press. The Jewish press at the time, the newspaper, the Jewish press, was a huge newspaper at the time, very big at the time. Now the Jewish press is a joke. Now the Jewish press doesn't have many, many readers. But at the time, they were huge. And at the time, if you asked people to write letters, you would get thousands of responses. That's the way it used to be. That's what happened when I was on trial. I put letters to the editor in the Jewish press, and there were articles about me in the Jewish press urging people to write to my judge. My judge got thousands of letters. Thousands of letters. And I would have gotten more time. I wound up doing 5.5 years in prison. I would have done a lot more if not for those letters. And we had a big campaign, a sustained campaign, to get people to write to President Clinton and to get them to write to Attorney General Janet Reno, we call her Janet the Rhino, and to make it clear to them that they're going to pay a price in the political election, that they're going to be held responsible for the terrorism that these people are committing, that if they don't go after the murderers of Rabbi Kahana, they're going to commit further acts of terrorism. This is what we warned about in the letters. And we publicized this all over the place, and I had TV shows on cable television warning week after week this would happen. And then surely enough, what happens? Because they didn't do anything, in 1993, what happens? They bombed the World Trade Center the first time. 6 people were murdered in that bombing, over $1 billion in damage. And that's when I think they realized that this is not just the murder of Rabbi Kahana. These murderers of Rabbi Kahana, whom they ignored because they're anti-Semites, they ignored his murderers, they're also going after everybody. They're not just after Rabbi Kahana and just after the Jews. They want to kill anyone who's not a Muslim, which is what we warned about, and they laughed at us when we said that. Well, eventually they did build a case. They did go after these people, and all of them were prosecuted. They got life without parole sentences, and they're rotting in prison right now. Of course, we look forward to their death because God is going to punish them much more severely than the federal prison system. Thank you, Joe. But that's part of the story in the history of JTF. We played a huge role in getting justice against the murderers of Rabbi Kahana. And of course, it's just the very beginning, the tip of the iceberg of the punishment that God is yet going to give them when they finally croak, when they finally drop dead in their federal prison cells and go to hell. God is really, then their punishment really will begin on a far more severe scale. On a far more severe scale. Thank you, Joe. And now we go to the great Binyamin Yisrael, who writes, and I quote, 1. When Brasilia was eating them French fries with mayonnaise on a Greyhound bus, where were you traveling to? Oh, I was on my way home from Washington, D.C. I had to go to Washington. I'd been invited to Washington to speak to people there, this conservative group. They had 2 meetings there and a conference there, and I was one of the people that went, and I was on my way home on the Greyhound bus. I was on my way back to New York City. Binyamin now writes, 2. Have Jesse Jackson and Farrakhan attacked JTF? Not that I know of. I haven't heard about it. I'd love to know if they did, but not that I know of. Have they attacked Pastor Manning? Again, I'm not aware of it if they have. Has BHO, Barack Hussein Obama, ever mentioned JTF or Pastor Manning? I don't think so. Hillary Clinton, of course, attacked us privately by calling Borough President, Manhattan Borough President, Virginia Fields. Mm-hmm. She called her up and got her to take our show off the air on Manhattan Cable. So Hillary Clinton was involved in fighting with JTF, in acting against JTF in the year 2000. Obama and Farrakhan and Jesse Jackson, I don't know that they were involved. I know they were very upset at JDL when I was running JDL with Rabbi Kahana, because we had our campaign Jews Against Jackson at the time. So, you know, they did attack us when we were running JDL. Thank you, Binyamin. And we go now to our fantastic friend, Lewinsky Stinks, Dr. Brennan Rocks, who writes, and I quote, "I meant white youth are more pro-Arab than their elders." Yes, I agree with you, Lewinsky Stinks. I think that white youth in general are more pro-Arab than the older generations. And I agree that even among white youth, I think that's true too. I agree with you. I think each generation has become worse in this country. I agree with you. That's part of the deterioration that we've seen in the United States. And Lewinsky Stinks now writes, "Pro-Arab Christians, quote-unquote, are also often pro-sodomy," unquote. That might be true. I guess that might be true. I'm glad you put the word Christians in quotes. They're not, you know, I mean, you know, actually, now I realize what you're referring to. I thought you were referring to Arab Christians, but you're saying pro-Arab Christians. In other words, the so-called Christians who support Israel, who are against Israel, who support the Arabs and who believe in replacement theology, those people, of course they're pro-sodomy. A lot of them are pro-sodomy, of course. Of course, because they want to be politically correct. They want to get in good with the news media and with all the evil people, of course. Of course. I'm sorry, I didn't understand exactly what you meant, but and that's my fault. It was your point is very, very clear. It's my fault. I don't know why it wasn't clear to me at first. But I agree with you. I agree with you. And Lewinsky Stinks now writes, "It's been 4 years since Nazi Joe croaked." Nazi Joe. Who is Nazi Joe? Here you got me. I'm not sure who you're referring to when you say Nazi Joe. I'm not sure. But I certainly agree with the other points you made. Very, very good points. Very true. All very, very true. Thank you, Lewinsky Stinks, Dr. Brennan Rocks. And we go now to another fantastic JTFer, Smash Islam, who writes, and I quote, "One, comment on recent expulsion of anti-Israel Islam emulating Lev Tahor from Guatemala," unquote. Yeah, I don't know the details on this, but you know, what a joke. I mean, Lev Tahor, they call themselves Lev Tahor. They're anything but Lev Tahor. Lev Tahor means a pure heart, and they don't have a pure heart. These are so-called religious Jews who hate Israel, who are against Israel, and violently against Israel. I mean, they want Israel to be destroyed, and they hate all the Jews who in any way support Israel. I mean, just evil, vicious people. And now they've gotten kicked out of Guatemala. They've been kicked out of everywhere they've been. In the United States, they had problems in upstate New York. They had problems everywhere. Everywhere they've been, they've had nothing but problems. Because they're unethical, sleazy, disgusting worms. So the fact that they've been kicked out of Guatemala, congratulations, Guatemala. You did the right thing. And now Smash Islam writes, too, "Why does Avigdor Eskin support Azerbaijan against Armenia?" Unquote. I don't know the answer to that. I'm a little surprised, because Azerbaijan is 95% Muslim. So why would he be supporting a Muslim country against a predominantly Christian country? I don't know. I don't understand that. That I don't get. Avigdor Eskin, by the way, is an Israeli Jewish individual on the right, someone who also supported Rabbi Kahana. So I'm puzzled by that. I don't understand that. You got me. And by the way, the Azerbaijanis are not only 95% Muslim in their own country. I don't know how many people know this, but about 16% of the population of Muslim terrorist Iran, about 16% of their population are Azerbaijanis. The Azerbaijanis are the second biggest ethnic group in Iran after the Persians, unless you consider Arabs in general. I, I, I mean, there are people who call them, there are Arabs who also live in Iran, but they are divided up into different ethnicities. But 16% of Iran's population are Azerbaijanis. Why anybody would support them when they're Muslim, I can't understand that. That I don't understand. Thank you, Smash Islam. And we go now to the great Chicago Jew, who writes, and I quote, "Your opinion on the group International Fellowship of Christians and Jews," unquote. Completely phony group. Completely phony group. You know they have $100 million a year budget. I mean, what do they accomplish? $100 million a year? Alevai. It should only be. Alevai means it should only be. Alevai that we would have a $1 million budget. They have a $100 million annual budget. Can you imagine what we could do if we had one-tenth of that, if we had a $10 million budget? If we had a $10 million budget, we'd be a mass movement. And now when I say that, I know that my fellow JTFers, you've seen it with your own eyes. You've seen the proof on Facebook. If we have a big budget, we're a mass movement fast. Fast. Can you imagine what we could do for the Jewish people? And they have a $100 million budget? Are you kidding me? And a lot of people they work with in this group are missionaries. So it's not a good group, even though they have a so-called Orthodox rabbi with them. It's a bad group. It's bad news. They're completely phony, and they accomplish absolutely nothing. Nothing for Israel, nothing for the Jewish people. They never take a stand when there's a really tough issue, and when Israel's really in trouble, they're not around. They don't take a stand. They're completely phony. Completely phony. And they have a $100 million budget. And we can't even get hundreds of thousands of dollars. I mean, our budget is just tens of thousands of bucks. Just a joke. What a joke. What a joke. Anyway, Hashem Yerachem. God should have mercy on us. Thank you, Chicago Jew. And we go now to the great LKZ, who writes, and I quote, "Practically speaking, it will be a miracle if JTF runs for the Knesset in the near future," unquote. LKZ, that's true, but you're speaking to somebody who believes in miracles. So, you know, I believe in miracles. We can't depend on miracles, and the odds are against miracles, but I believe in miracles. LKZ, I saw over 1.5 million Jews freed from the Soviet Union. Nobody ever thought that could ever happen. If you had been back in those days, you would see how hopeless that seemed at the time. When we said we're going to free all the Jews from Russia, everybody laughed at us. So I've seen miracles. I see the state of Israel, and you know, and outnumbered 100-1, winning wars in 6 days. I've seen a lot of miracles in my day. So I believe in miracles. I don't know if we're going to be able to run for the Knesset in the near future. I don't know what's going to be. But I do know, LKZ, that I think we have a shot at influencing people and waking a lot of people up. I think we have a chance to potentially do that. That's what we're aiming to do. LKZ now writes, "What do Jews do about the terrorists that will crawl in shortly?" Unquote. That's a very good question. They're going to crawl in because of the tunnels they're building. And by the way, they're building tunnels. Hezbollah is building it in the north of Israel as well. There are tunnels that Hezbollah is building in the north, just like Hamas built them in the south, in Gaza. It's a very serious problem. I hate to say it, but in my opinion, the answer again is Jews have to organize, become a mass movement, and not tolerate these policies. If we move public opinion, and public opinion does not tolerate these policies, and there are massive protests and massive opposition, that's something that can change things. And you know, I know that that's not easy to do when you don't have a movement, when you have a movement like ours that's underfunded, that has such a meager budget, and then no one else other than our movement is really speaking about these things the way they should be spoken about. So it's It's not an easy thing to do, but that's really what we have to do. We have to do it. As difficult as it is, you know, we got to do it. We've got to organize, and we've got to put pressure on the right authorities and build a movement that will become a force to defend Jewish interests and to defend Jews that are in danger. Thank you, LKZ, and to wake people up. Thank you, LKZ. And we now go to our great friend Kalman Ben Menachem, who writes, and I quote, Reb Chaim, Leon Trotsky was a yeshiva bucher who became a big-time Red. What happened? Thank you, unquote. Well, Kalman, I think you're using just a phrase here, I don't think you literally mean he was a yeshiva bucher. I think you're just using the phrase as an expression. But I don't want people to be misled. He never went to yeshiva, and he was never religious, Leon Trotsky. He grew up in an assimilated home and was always in a very assimilated. His parents were communists. He was a communist. His name, of course, was not Leon Trotsky. His name originally was Lev Bronstein, and he changed it to Leon Trotsky. And we're referring, by the way, to one of the people who was one of the leading figures in the communist Bolshevik revolution that turned Russia communist in 1917. And he was, of course, a self-hating Jew, a self-hating Jewish communist, very evil person, one of the most evil Jews in history. The terrible things that happened to the Jewish people because of this vicious traitor. And he called his movement, he had feuds with the other communists, there were feuds back and forth, but he called his movement Fourth International. That was what he signed off as. That was his movement. That's what he was known as. Fourth International. Those were the Trotskyites. Remember how Joshua Rosenberg of Australia signed on to our forum, and I never even thought of it. He signed on to our forum as Fourth International. That was the name he used. He went around calling himself that same name. And only later we learned that Joshua Rosenberg of Australia is anti-Zionist, wants to destroy Israel, advocates that all Jews intermarry and that the Jewish people disappear, calls himself an atheist, condemns and hates the Jewish religion, preaches anti-Semitism. But anyway, as far as Trotsky's concerned, Joshua Rosenberg, I would see why he would be a Trotskyite. But as far as Leon Trotsky himself is concerned, he was never religious, never went to yeshiva. He came from an assimilated home, and he came, these self-hating Jews, they're so afraid to be Jewish. They're so afraid to be part of their people, a hated minority, hated persecuted minority, that they desperately want to be part of something bigger. So they're workers of the world. We're together. There are no differences between Jews and any other group. We're all workers. We're all fighting for the working class. They always want to make it into something international, into something bigger than just the Jewish people, because they're terrified of standing alone and being a hated minority and standing for the truth. That's part of the psychology of these sick Jewish anti-Semites, whether it's Leon Trotsky or whether it's Joshua Rosenberg or whether it's the news media Jews or the New York Nazi Times Jews or the Obama Jews. That's basically part of their mental illness. Thank you, Kalman. And we now go to our great friend Mansch, who writes, and I quote, "You've misconstrued my questions three times in a row due to a woefully inadequate number of characters allowed per quest. It should be at least tripled," unquote. Mansch, I apologize. If I didn't understand your questions properly, I apologize. We have limitations on the number of characters that are permitted. And the reason we have those limitations is because it was they're just too many. It's just, we go on for too long. These shows are already very long. And I just couldn't do three-hour shows anymore. It's not realistic. It's not practical. There were shows I was doing programs that were 3 hours long, Mansch. And if I allow more characters, if we increase the number of characters, that means people are going to pack more questions in. And I understand you're saying that to make your question clear, you know, you would need the extra characters, but it would lead to more questions. And I have to answer more questions, and it would go on and on and on, and the show would go on for 3 hours. We can't do that. We just can't do it, Mansch. I apologize if I didn't understand your questions and if the answers I gave were not correct because I didn't understand the questions. I apologize if that's true. But somehow you got to figure out, and you see all these other people are doing this. You see other people are doing it. You look at the other questions. People are coping with the, with the limited amount of space. You see people asking good, I think a lot of our questions are very good questions. You see people coping with it. You got to figure out how to focus on one subject and do it with a limited number of characters. But I understand what you're saying, and again, I'm sorry, I apologize if I did not understand your question properly. I do apologize for that. Thank you, Mensch. And we go now to the great Dr. Dan, the voice of reason, common sense, and logic, who writes, and I quote, 1. What did Kahana say about Vietnam and gays? Unquote. Well, about Vietnam, Rabbi Kahana felt that the United States could have won the war in Vietnam easily. The United States had a policy of containment. They did not invade North Vietnam. They did not block Haiphong Harbor. From the very beginning, when the real big escalation took place in 1965 under Lyndon Johnson, there had been limited American engagement under the Eisenhower and Kennedy administrations before then, but Lyndon Johnson waited until after he was reelected in 1964, and then in 65, early 65, he began a big escalation of the war in Vietnam. Vietnam was divided into South Vietnam and North Vietnam. South Vietnam was an American ally. North Vietnam was controlled by the communists, and North Vietnam and the Viet Cong were their communist allies in the South, were terrorists. They were working together to overthrow the South Vietnamese government, and that was the nature of the war. The United States, in the end, wound up deploying over 500,000 American troops. At the peak, there were 550,000 American troops in Vietnam. Now, with that number of troops, they should have easily been able to win the war. Easily. Instead, over 50,000 American soldiers were killed in vain. The United States lost the war. The North Vietnamese overran South Vietnam, Laos, and Cambodia, turning all of those countries into communist countries. It was pathetic. And Rabbi Kahana believed that if the United States had wanted to win, it's the same situation you have now with Israel. You have Israeli leaders that don't want to win. And the United States didn't want to win in Vietnam. They just wanted to contain the North Vietnamese. They didn't want to invade and actually defeat North Vietnam. That was not the goal of Johnson. That was not the goal of Richard Nixon when he succeeded Johnson. And so the end result was American soldiers died in vain, and the end lost everything. Lost everything. It was a catastrophe for the United States. And Rabbi Kahana felt that the results could have been very different. And I think history has proven he was right. Gays, what Rabbi Kahana said about gays. Rabbi Kahana believed in the Torah view. Homosexuality is a toivah, an abomination. It doesn't mean that we hate people who have a mental illness. It's a mental problem. There's no question it's a mental problem. We don't hate sick people. In fact, we're obligated to try to help sick people. As long as they're not evil and they're not deliberately trying to destroy Judaism and doing monstrous things, as some of these so-called gay activists do. But we're supposed to try to help sick people, and the best thing we can do for them is to urge them to become Torah Jews and to change their ways. How difficult is that? It may be very difficult. It may be. It may very well be very difficult for them to change. And maybe they can't change. Maybe they just have to control themselves and just not engage in this type of behavior. I don't know. And maybe some people can change and some people can only control themselves, but there's no question that behavior is something you can control. If heterosexuals who are married, if many of them don't go out and commit adultery, despite the temptations of adultery, homosexuals can also control themselves. And I don't know, is it more difficult? I don't know. I don't know the answer to that. I'm not you know, I'm not an expert on the subject, but you need a rabbi who has more halachic knowledge than I do. But I do know that when the Torah says that you're not supposed to do something, that means the Torah would not command somebody not to do something unless they have the ability not to do something. God never gives us a command that we cannot fulfill. When we're commanded to do something, it's because God knows that if we try hard enough, we can do it. And Rabbi Kahana believed in the Torah view on this issue. And he wrote about it. He did write about it in the Jewish press. And he believed in the Torah point of view. Dr. Dan now writes, two, comment on Levi Eshkol and Golda Meir. Okay. Levi Eshkol and Golda Meir were both prime ministers of Israel. Eshkol was prime minister during the Six-Day War, and then he died in office. Golda Meir, whom the Jews worshipped, as Rabbi Kahana used to say, in Sinai, when the Jews left Egypt in Sinai, they had the golden calf. American Jews had the golden calf. Golda Meir was a disaster, and Levi Eshkol and the whole labor movement, they were a disaster. Disastrous. They're part of the establishment in Israel that brainwashed Jewish youth not to believe in Judaism, that made Israeli Jews what so many Israeli Jews are like today, people without Jewish values, and hundreds of thousands leave Israel and don't know anything about Judaism. Many of them are even hostile to Judaism. They're confused about the justice of their own cause. They don't even know who's right and wrong in the issue of the Arabs versus the Jews, and there's never been you can't have something more clear, more decisive about who's right and wrong. It's so obvious. But under these leaders in Israel, like Levi Eshkol and Golda Meir, the Jews in Israel are confused, self-hating. They don't know what to do. It's just they're filled with doubts about the justice of their own cause for survival, even. It's pathetic. It's just pathetic. The Jews are such a special people with such a special destiny. And instead of being proud and upright and feeling what an honor it is to be part of this great destiny, to be a light unto the nations, a holy nation, nation of priests, instead of being proud and welcoming and embracing this great role, this great calling that we have as a people, they run around trying to satisfy their thirst for spiritual experiences in places like India and Thailand and all over the place. It's unbelievable what a mess has been created by these evil leaders in Israel, and how essential it is that we replace these leaders. Dr. Dan now writes, three, why do good people die and get sick at similar times, unquote. Well, if and when something like that happens, it's probably to signal us about something. I don't know. It depends on the circumstances. Each case can be different. When you see sometimes three people in a row, for instance, all die, or three people in a row all get sick at once, sometimes it's a message. It's a message. And, message about what we should be doing. Sometimes. And sometimes it's a test. Sometimes it's a test. I'm not blaming the people that get sick or the people that die. I'm not blaming them, God forbid. All of us are responsible. All of us are responsible when bad things happen. Because if we did what God commanded us to do, bad things wouldn't happen. People wouldn't get sick and people wouldn't die anymore. And we literally believe that people wouldn't die anymore. We believe someday there's going to be eternal life. So, when things like this happen, we should search our souls and ask, what is the message here? What should we be getting out of this in order to make ourselves better people and in order to make this a better world so that people won't suffer? Thank you, Dr. Den. And we go now to The great paper cut, who writes, Chaim, Allah has three daughters. The Quran is a mess, devotes a whole chapter to Mary. And Kaaba had 365 idols, including Allah. How is this not idolatry? Unquote. Well, the Arabs were certainly idol worshippers before Islam. There's no question about that. And the Kaaba, which they took, was there's no question that there was that was for purposes of idolatry. And there are indeed, you know, there are aspects of Islam that you can regard as idolatrous. There are rabbis who teach us, rabbinic sages who teach us, they're very much against Islam. All the rabbis in the Talmud are against Islam. All of them. Maimonides, who said that Islam is not idolatry, said that Muhammad was a madman. He called him Hameshuga, the lunatic, a madman. So, I mean, I wish we had leaders today that were willing to say things like that. But this is, you know, they all were against this evil religion. However, they said that, you know, they said that you can't deny certain things. If Muslims believe in one God, in just one God, and believe there is no God other than that one God, that's not considered to be idolatry. In Judaism, if you genuinely believe in just one God who is the ruler of the whole universe, even if you distort what that God says, then as Islam does, then of course you're doing something that's very, very evil. If you murder innocent people in the name of that God, if you commit all these atrocious crimes in the name of that God, if you do all these terrible other things, of course that's a terrible desecration of God's name. It's a terrible thing that you're doing. But you're not committing idolatry. That's one thing you're not doing. That's one thing that you're not committing idolatry. As long as you believe in one God, one monotheistic. If you have a monotheistic theology and you believe in just one God as the ruler of the universe, and that is what Islam claims to believe in. Are there aspects of Islam that that can be regarded as idolatrous? Yes, there are. Yes, there are. By the way, are there rabbinic figures who did consider Islam to be idolatry? Yes, there are rabbinic figures who did not agree with Harambam. Harambam is Maimonides, who said that he said Islam is evil. Maimonides said that we cannot have a dialogue with Muslims. We can have a dialogue. He said Jews and Christians can dialogue because we both believe in the Tanakh, in the Jewish Bible. So he said Jews and Christians can have a dialogue. He said we can have discussions with the Christians, and we can discuss religion with the Christians. But he said Jews and Muslims cannot have a dialogue. He said there's nothing to have a dialogue about. They deny the whole basis, the whole foundation of our faith. They claim that the Jews just made up the whole Bible, and that they lied, and that, you know, because they were enemies of Muhammad and enemies of Allah. So Maimonides, the same rabbinic leader who said that it's not idolatry, he said that we can't even, there's nothing to speak to the Muslims about, there's nothing to talk to them about. There's no basis for us to have any discussions with them even. But at the same time, he said that their actual belief, one of the things that they're not doing, he said, is committing idolatry. He said this is not idolatry if they believe in one God. That's the view, paper cut. I know Christians don't share that view, but I would say that is probably the predominant Jewish view. That's probably the predominant Jewish view. And again, Islam is evil. Islam is murderous. Islam completely distorts and falsifies everything God stands for. It's a terrible religion. There's no basis for any discussions or dialogue with Muslims because they deny the very foundation of our religious beliefs. But the question when it comes to idolatry, that's on that particular issue, the question is, do they believe in more than one God, and do they give power to anyone other than God? Because that's what idolatry by definition is. Thank you, Paper Cut. And we go now to our great friend Maimonides, who writes, and I quote, Shalom Chaim. Do the benefits of foreign investment in Israel outweigh the cost of Israel being dependent on outsiders for economic stimulus? Unquote. Well, I think we can... it's a good question. It depends on the circumstances, Maimonides. Sometimes foreign investment is good. If it's developing Jewish brains and Jewish industry within Israel, it could be good. It depends. It depends. If we were in charge, it would be good. We would make sure that, the foreign investment serves the better interests of the people of Israel. And we would welcome foreign investment in Israel. But, I mean, there is foreign investment that's beneficial, and there's foreign investment that can be destructive. If it's foreign investment that creates dependency, that's not good. If it's foreign investment that does the opposite, that actually strengthens our independent institutions, then it is good. It depends on each case. It depends on a case-by-case basis. You have to review what is good and what is not good. Thank you, Maimonides. And we go now to our great friend, Russian Leo 777, who writes, and I quote, "Have you read Atlas Shrugged in its entirety? Was Ayn Rand evil, insane, or both?" Unquote. I have not read it in its entirety. Ayn Rand was a militant atheist. I do think that militant atheism, I think atheism is crazy. And I don't mean to insult if there are people listening here who are supporters of ours who are atheists. I don't want to insult people. But I can't understand how anybody could look at the world and say that there wasn't a creator. That it all just happened. It's absurd. It's patently absurd. The fact that there's a creation proves that there was a creator. The fact that there's a world proves that there was a creator. To say there's nothing, there's just nothing. It just happened and there's nothing. There's no reason for anything. It's just absurd. It's so absurd. I mean, to me, that's just utter insanity. So it's not anything personal against Ayn Rand. It's anybody who believes in that. It's just, I mean, it's so illogical. Was she evil? In certain ways, I think some of the things she advocated were evil. Some of the selfishness, the libertarianism. I think some of it is. On the other hand, she was Jewish, Ayn Rand. And at least she was born Jewish, even though she became a militant atheist. And she was a strong supporter of Israel. She always was a strong supporter of Israel. She said the Arabs are barbarians and the Israelis are the only civilized people in the Middle East. She very strongly defended Israel and was very much against the Arabs and the Muslims. So, you know, I don't know. I don't know if I would use the word evil in a broad way with her. But she, you know, some of the things she did by convincing people to be atheists, that's pretty bad. Unfortunately, that's pretty bad. And I do think it's crazy. I do think it's crazy. I know that people would say, "Well, Chaim, what are you talking about? Being an atheist is not insane. It's a difference of opinion." I think it's crazy. It's incomprehensibly illogical to me. We can have differences of opinion on all types of things, but to say there's no creator? To say there's no creator of the universe? It all just happened? And there's no rhyme or reason for anything? It's madness. I'm sorry. I cannot in any way see the logic of that in any way, shape, or form. I'm sorry. Thank you, Russian Leo. And we go now to the great Mein Koran, who writes, and I quote, "Dear Chaim, could you please say a little prayer for my health? Only 21 years old, yet I'm having significant health issues," unquote. I'm so sorry to hear that, Mein Koran. Mein Kampf is actually Mein Kampf and Mein Koran are pretty similar. But I'm really sorry to hear that, Mein Koran. I'm really sorry to hear that, and I absolutely will pray for you. I absolutely hope that I know you're a very good person and a very brave person, a very logical person, and I hope that Hashem gives you a refuah shlema, complete recovery. I hope that God gives you a complete recovery. And I'm really sorry to hear that. I hope you don't smoke. I hope you don't smoke. And I hope you eat healthy food and exercise. If you eat healthy food and exercise, and try not to get stressed. Try to relax. Try not to be over. I mean, you know, you could be. You know, I'm a person who does all types of vigorous things in my life, mentally and physically. But I try to do it calmly and coolly, and not let it stress me, because stress is very dangerous. Try not to get stressed. And eat healthy and exercise. Now, if you already have something, if you already have a significant health issue here, and it could be genetic, sometimes, you know, you already have something and it's difficult to deal with. But I will pray, I pray that you are able to resolve it. I would just recommend that you live a healthy life to try to, at least try to give yourself the best fighting chance to overcome these problems. And of course, you should pray. You should also pray as well. You should pray to God that He help you, because God is the greatest doctor in the world. Thank you, Mein Koran. I'm not saying you should rely on God only. God gave us doctors to heal us. God gave us brains and wants us. God wants us to be His partners in this world, so that we get credit, because He wants to give us credit for what we're doing. He wants us to earn. To earn the good things that come with obeying Him. So we should go to human doctors as well, and we do believe in modern medicine. But praying to God also helps. Thank you, Mein Koran, and I will pray for you. And we go now to the great EB22, who writes, and I quote, "Which people in the Israel media, print or broadcast, do you consider assets for Israel? Please share your thoughts about the late Joan Rivers." Okay. I don't really think there are any assets in the Israel media, EB. I don't see it. I don't see people telling the truth. I just don't see it. Unless you consider people, I mean, we have certain people, you know, in places like Arutz Sheva, but they're considered to be marginal people within the context of the Israeli media. I mean, you know, when I say Israeli media, I assume you're referring to the major media. There are people marginally, not Arutz Sheva in general, but there are people on Arutz Sheva who are pretty good. There are people, here and there you'll have someone who's not bad. But generally speaking, I really don't see on the major Israel media, I don't think Israel has any assets. I think it's just bad, bad, bad. And you don't get a job with the Israeli media unless you toe the line. I'm convinced of that. And I think we see it by the deliberate misreporting and propagandizing for the left that we see in the Israeli media. E.B. now writes, and I quote, "Please share your thoughts about the late Joan Rivers." I know that a lot of people on our forum liked her because she was pro-Israel. And she was. And she once gave me $400 when I was running JDL. She sent me a check for $400 when I was running the Jewish Defense League. Something which she told me never to reveal. As long as I'm alive, don't tell anybody about it, she said. Okay, well, now I can tell people. I keep my word. When someone asks me something like that, if someone says, she said, if I pass away, I don't care what you say. But as long as I'm alive, she said. That's what she wrote to me. So, I honored her request all these years. That was 30 years ago. So she, you know, she gave us $400 in JDL, and she, you know, and she did defend Israel. But there are other aspects of her life that were really, really very troubling, very, very bad. And she set a terrible example for the Jewish people, unfortunately. And I can't help but comment on it, not because I want to be judgmental, but because if we let it pass and we let it go when you have a public figure like this, it leads people down the wrong road. Then people go down the wrong road and admire somebody, and you'll have a certain number of people that then will also wind up doing bad things in life that can be harmful. So we have an obligation when you have a public figure doing things publicly so that the whole public could see that are terrible and that are very harmful, you have to mention it, you have to criticize. Joan Rivers' daughter intermarried. She married outside the Jewish faith. Joan Rivers spent $1 million on their wedding. They had a wedding. Joan Rivers spent $1 million on the wedding. And this was, I think, like around 10 years ago. So you can imagine it would be much more than $1 million today. Joan Rivers, that's just the beginning. And that's bad enough. Let's look at Joan Rivers' funeral. Joan Rivers' funeral, everything in her funeral was from her own request. She requested everything. She asked for all the arrangements they made in her funeral. These are things that she all asked. She was a very strong-willed woman, and she decided how she wanted her funeral. She specifically laid out what she wanted in her funeral. She wrote about it, and she set it out, and they're respecting her wishes. And here's what her funeral is about. Look at the example she's setting over here. The funeral is being held at the New York Nazi Times deformed temple called Temple Emmanuel, which is the ultimate evil in American Jewry. Temple Emmanuel is the temple where they honored Roosevelt and honored the murderers of 6 million Jews during the Holocaust, where the New York Nazi Times always went. It was the temple of choice for the New York Nazi Times Jews. The worst and the lowest and the most vile people go to that place. The invited guests and speakers at her funeral are almost all Jew-hating scum. Just the lowest of the low. Self-hating Jews, anti-Semites, the lowest of the low. Singing at her funeral is the gay men's chorus. She wanted the gay men's chorus to sing at her funeral. What a Dame, I think they're singing, or that someday, I don't remember exactly the song. But the gay men's chorus came to sing at her funeral. Imagine this is a Jewish funeral with someone who's going to be facing God on Judgment Day, and her message to the world is she wants the gay men's chorus to come and sing for her. She said, I don't want some rabbi speaking about me. I want the gay men's chorus to come and sing at the funeral. Her body is going to be cremated, or maybe already has been cremated, I don't know. But they announced that it was going to be cremated, maybe it already has been. Of course, in Judaism, cremation is completely forbidden, because we believe in resurrection of the dead. And we believe that you're not supposed to cremate the body, you're supposed to allow the body to naturally go back into the soil and be absorbed by the soil again. We do not believe in burning the body. The body is sacred even after the body is dead. Even after the person's soul has left the body and you just have a dead body, a corpse, it's still sacred. You're not allowed to tamper with it. You're not allowed to cut into it or cremate it. Her funeral is being handled by the Frank Campbell Funeral Home. Frank Campbell Funeral Home for Hollywood actors and actresses. It's a non-Jewish funeral home. No connection to anything involving Jews or Judaism. So, after you finish going to her funeral, where you hear the gay men's chorus come and sing, at a deformed temple that is one of the most notorious houses of evil in American Jewish history, with invited guests and speakers like Whoopi Goldberg and other leftist Jew haters coming to speak, cremating her body, going to a non-Jewish Hollywood-style funeral home. And again, I know the Frank Campbell Funeral Home, it's located in Manhattan, but it's for the Hollywood, Broadway-type actors and actresses who were among the most evil people in the world. In her career, if that's not enough, in her career, she always told dirty jokes. She promoted homosexuality on her national talk shows in the 1980s. She had people coming on dressed in drag and promoted homosexuality. Made it sound like it's cute. I mean, these are terrible things. You don't do things like this. When someone goes, first of all, when someone in their personal life does bad things, that's bad enough. But to promote it among millions of people, to try to persuade millions of people that something that, that God very much objects to is really cute and nice and wonderful and acceptable, that's terrible. And when she was doing that, by the way, in the 1980s, most Americans did not approve of these things, did not approve of homosexuality. In those days, she was, in other words, she was part of the group that was fighting to make this acceptable. Many people don't remember that or know that. She was one of their favorites. So, unfortunately, there were a lot of things in her life that were extremely troubling and extremely problematic. I don't hate her by any means. And I'm sorry for her. I was sorry to hear that she died. Again, because she did send us, she sent us money, she defended Israel. She did certain things that tell me that there was something there. There was something good about her as well. That there was. But, oh, what a terrible, I mean, it was so darkened her life by so many terrible things she did that I don't even know if she realized the harm she was doing. And it should serve as a symbol for us that even good people with good instincts, when they're not given spiritual guidance and spiritual direction, look how far off they can go. Look how sad and far off, look how terrible things can get. It should be a lesson to us. I don't wish anything bad on her, but most of her life, unfortunately, was not the life that we want people to lead, and generally speaking, she led people in a bad direction with her humor and her funeral and her intermarried family and her dirty jokes and just the whole Hollywood filth and everything else. This is not what we're supposed to be doing as a light unto the nations. Thank you, EB. And we go now to, 1 second, let me just check something here quickly. Make sure. Oh, wow. This is a long show today. I thought the show was going on for a long time. Okay, this is going to be a doozy today. This is a long one. It's almost an hour and a half already. Next is the great Tag Mechir Tzedek, who writes, and I quote, "If Romney or McCain especially would be president, would it be worse in regards to Syria and or ISIS?" Unquote. I don't know. I know that the biggest threat to us, Tag Mechir, is not ISIS. The biggest threat to us is Iran. Iran is the big threat to us, not ISIS. Because for one simple reason, Iran is building nuclear bombs. That's much more serious than ISIS. And people are losing track of that and losing sight of that. And on the issue of Iran, Romney and McCain were good on that issue. They were better than Netanyahu on that issue, much better. They said they're going to give an ultimatum to Iran to stop building or else. So on the issue of Iran, we would have been in much better shape if Romney or McCain had been elected president. What would have happened in regard to Syria if they had gone after ISIS? I don't know. Possibly they would have been worse on that particular issue. I don't know. I'm not sure. But Iran is a much greater threat, and on that issue, we would have been in much better shape. Tag Mechir now writes, "Did the rabbis kill Bar Kokhba?" Unquote. Oh no, of course not. Absolutely not. The rabbis supported Bar Kokhba. They thought he was the Mashiach, and he could have been the Mashiach. He could have been the Messiah. He had the qualities to be the Messiah, but unfortunately, because of ego and other things, he ruined his chance. You know, Bar Kokhba murdered his uncle, the great Rabbi Elazar Hamodai. Rabbi Elazar Hamodai was Bar Kokhba's uncle, and because he would, and because of his great prayers and fasting and praying, because of that, the Romans were not successful in breaking the Jewish spirit in the land of Israel. God gave the Jews the ability to defeat the Romans, and to keep, or to at least keep them at bay, to prevent them from winning, because of the wonderful prayers of this great holy man, Rabbi Hamodai, who was Bar Kokhba's uncle. So the Romans and one of the evil people that was working with the Romans decided they're going to ruin this thing. And so they decided to try to convince Bar Kokhba that his uncle, Rabbi Hamodai, was collaborating with the Romans, and he wasn't. They falsely accused him of collaborating with the Romans. It was a complete lie. And Rabbi Akiva, Bar Kokhba, Rabbi Akiva was also supported by Kokhba. Rabbi Akiva was, of course, one of the greatest rabbis in history. But Bar Kokhba murdered his uncle because he thought he was collaborating with the Romans, and it was completely false. Completely false, completely untrue. He murdered him. And that was the beginning of the end. That was the end when that happened. Then the Romans were able, God punished the Jews, and the Romans were able to conquer Beitar and conquer and move in and destroy the remaining Jewish resistance, and hundreds of thousands of Jews were murdered at that point. No, it's not true. The rabbis did not kill Bar Kokhba. They supported Bar Kokhba. They actually supported him because the great Rabbi Akiva convinced the rabbis to support Bar Kokhba. And again, he could have been, if he had been more righteous and if he had been more tolerant of when I say tolerant, I mean tolerant of good people, of his fellow Jews. He could have been the Mashiach. He could have been the Messiah. Anyway, interesting. It's an interesting story. Someday maybe we'll give more history on it. Thank you, Tag Mechir. And we go now to the great Irish Zionist who has done so much for our movement. God bless Irish Zionist. Irish Zionist writes, and I quote, Shalom Chaim, what are your thoughts on Afghanistan sitting on $1 trillion worth of rare earth elements, copper, gold, and iron? God bless, unquote. Well, you know, it doesn't surprise me that Afghanistan could sit on things and still be one of the poorest countries in the world. It could be sitting on gold mines, literally, and not exploiting it, because Muslims are self-destructive, and the only thing they have in their mind is slaughtering people and committing crimes against non-Muslims. That's the only thing they could think of. If this is true, if Afghanistan is really such a rich country, it would just be, I mean, to me it would just be another example of the incredible waste that we see when 1.5 billion people in this world follow a religion that makes people so stupid and so ignorant and so self-destructive, so primitive. It's pathetic. Thank you, Irish Zionist. And we go now to the great Kahana Loyalist, who writes, and I quote, Dear Chaim, what is your opinion on trade unions? I think they are a pillar of the middle class. Kahana Loyalist, I have to disagree with you on this. I think trade unions have been bad. I think that they are socialistic. And I think that they push for government control and government handouts. I think that they monopolize in a dictatorial, tyrannical way the voice of the workers. In other words, they basically force everybody working for a certain company or a certain industry to join the union, otherwise you don't get a job. And so the union bosses, the people running the unions, the union bosses, they become like dictators, and they're very corrupt. Unions are notoriously corrupt. I know a lot of people in my family and just in general who were lifelong union members and, of course, were betrayed by their unions. If people want to form a union, that's one thing. If workers want to get together and they want to decide to form a union, that's one thing. But to force everybody in their office or in their factory or in their industry to join a union, or else to force people to join a union, to say you must join the union, you must pay union dues, and you must do what the union tells you to do, that's dictatorial. That's dictatorial, and I think the unions have done terrible harm to society and to the economy. Look at the Histadrut in Israel. It's run like a mafia. It's a terrible influence on Israel. Terrible. It's an arm and a weapon in the hands of the establishment that they use against Israeli people, against Israelis who want, if you want a job, you would be starving in Israel if you didn't join the Histadrut. And this is a corrupt, Marxist, evil, money-grubbing, despicable organization, the Histadrut. Terrible. And in the United States, I mean, the history of labor unions and their corruption and their ties to organized crime, horrific. Just horrific. So I think trade unions, generally speaking, have a negative influence. And I think that history proves that they hurt the economy, hurt the middle class, hurt the people that they're supposed to be defending. That's my opinion, Kahana Loyalist, but I thank you for the question. And I want to thank everybody for another program that I very much enjoyed doing. Until next week, shalom.